Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. That's right, Dorothy. This is Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, and today my producer, Nikki Starr, and I have a great show planned, especially for fans of the classic movie Casablanca. Diana Sanger from Classic Movie Guide has agreed to be my co-host, plus Jazz Shaw from Midstream Radio, who's an avid Casablanca fan, just like I am, will also be joining us. Our special guest is Tom Barnes, author of Casablanca Film Trivia, Here's Looking at You, Kid, a fun book containing everything you've ever wanted to know about this popular American film. So, Nikki, are you ready to find out some fascinating new things about Casablanca?
You have no idea. I am so ready.
My feelings exactly. But first, let's say hi to one of our regular guests, and Diana Sanger, who's agreed to be a co-host for the day. Diana, welcome back to Movie Addict Headquarters.
Thanks, Betty Jo. I'm grateful to be here again.
Well, it's always great to have you with us. And let's also welcome Jazz, who must be very excited about our topic today. Right, Jazz?
I can't tell you how much. You've done your shows on the top 10 lists for everybody's movies, and you know anything with bogeys pretty much in the top 10, but this was definitely one of the best movies of all time.
I certainly agree with you, Jazz. And although Diana and Tom are the experts today, you and I represent the fans, so I'm really glad you're here with me. And speaking of experts, it's my pleasure now to introduce Tom Barnes, author of Casablanca Film Trivia, Here's Looking at You, Kid. Congratulations on your fun book, Tom.
Thank you, Betty Jo, and I'm really happy to be here on your show, and especially with such distinguished people as Diana and Jazz.
Me too, and I really enjoyed reading your book. I had the best time trying to answer all those questions you came up with. I think there were over 1,000, and I don't think that I told you before, but Diana Sanger is a publisher as well as a film critic, and I know she's got some questions for you about your book. So, Diana, why don't you start the ball rolling with the things you'd like to find out?
I would sure love to. Congratulations, first, Tom, on publishing a book. That's very, very exciting.
Thank you.
And it's like Jazz said, man, is this a topic that we all love or what? How did you first decide to best organize this book?
Well, you know, years ago, I started showing this film to my classes. I was a high school teacher for 35 years, and I started showing the film to my classes for about 25 years. And originally what I did was I had a worksheet for them to go through, which they did. And then from that, it evolved where I actually, in 1993, I invented a board game based on the film Casablanca. And the format is a little different. And I thought about, you know, publishing the board game, but I ran into some problems regarding, you know, licensing issues and also especially cost. So about 8 months ago, I decided I had all this material. So the board game was kind of prohibitive at that time. And so I decided to compile it into a book. Now, the book format is different than the board game, and when I begin to put it into a book, what I wanted to do was, there's a lot of trivia books out there, but a lot of times a lot of the trivia is very random. So what I wanted to have was very specific categories, and so this is why I organized it into specific categories that, you know, that it would appeal to, in a sense, sometimes different audiences within the book itself. The clothing and apparel, for example, is its own chapter, and all the questions that relate to that. You know, script and lines is an obvious chapter, and I have two different chapters on script and lines. But then I've got some kind of esoteric things, too. The one about the actors that actually appeared in the film that and the refugee trail that they took leaving Europe. And so I ended up with a whole chapter on questions just relating to them. So it's a book about the film, but it's also a book about a number of things related to the film.
That's very exciting. Now, what was your motivation for Casablanca being the film that you were going to do all this about?
Well, you know, I like to say is that Casablanca was released 2 weeks after I was born. And as a kid, you know, going through junior high, I enjoyed a lot of the older films, and even Casablanca was considered an older film then. And it was just, I've always loved classic films, but then over the years I would see Casablanca on television and what have you, and it just became something to me that became representative of what is quintessentially America, even though so much of the cast is non-American in the film, but it certainly had American values to it. And then as I begin to show it to my students and explain, you know, aspects of American culture to my students by using the film, it became even more important. So it became my favorite film really from the time of maybe junior high and high school on up to today. So I've been watching it for a long time. I've been watching it for over 50 years.
I hate to say this, but I have too. And I never get tired of seeing it. Do you, Diana?
Not at all.
And I know that Jazz does it because he's already confessed to how fond he is of Casablanca.
I know I've seen it at least 50 times, I would say, without reservation over the years. I used to have it on tape, and now I have it on DVD. And in preparation for the show, I watched it again this weekend. I don't know how many times that meant.
Oh, I think that you've picked that. Tom has picked the perfect movie to motivate his students and to write a book about and to do a board game about. But I was just, and I had a lot of trouble with those trivia questions. Of course, there are some answers that are easy, but you really do go in detail on those questions in the book. But I was wondering, Tom, which trivia question is the hardest one to answer? Are you willing to give that away? And maybe even the easiest, which we probably would be able to answer.
Well, you know, obviously I have a number of really difficult ones in the book, you know, because I have that question on, you know, which figure skater won the world championship skating to the music of Casablanca and portraying Rick in his performance in 1993. That's a pretty tough question.
Not if you're a figure skater fan like me. That
right, if you're a figure skater, it's not. But, you know, that's Kurt Browning of Canada.
Yeah.
But,
I never would have got that.
Yeah, that's a fairly tough one.
Oh, I wish you could get that on tape because that was just fantastic.
Right, you remember the performance.
Kurt Browning, that's his best. I'm a fan of Kurt Browning's, but that was his best performance.
But one question that I like a lot, I'm not sure it's the most difficult, but I think when I put it together, I found it was kind of an interesting question, is that three times Victor Laszlo orders drinks in Rick's. And all three drinks begin with the letter C. And he orders the drinks for himself and Ilsa. And they all begin with the letter C. And what are those three drinks?
I don't know. Even after reading
the book. One is champagne cocktail.
Ah, Jazz, very good. You remember one of them.
Wow, and this is so weird because actually I prepared some questions for you and it touches on the subject, but it's not the same one. Wow,
Diana? Do you know the three drinks?
No, I'm sitting here with the book, but I can't look it up that fast.
Actually,
I'm just going by memory.
But that's good. You got the champagne cocktail. Yeah, the first one was Cointreau, which is spelled with a C.
Oh,
and then
yes.
The third one is cognac.
Oh,
cognac. Okay, I knew that.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of it.
But anyway, I'm not sure that's the hardest question. I'm sure I have many, many harder questions, but to me that was kind of an intriguing question. And another thing about the Laszlo character, you notice that he orders drinks for himself and Ilsa. Never once does he consult with Ilsa what she wants. He just automatically orders, and it's always something different. I just think that's just an observation I make about the film that you know, if you remade the film today, you probably wouldn't do that.
No, that would not be politically correct, I guess.
Absolutely
but what
not.
What about the easiest? What do you think the easiest?
Oh, you know, probably which actor plays Rick, something like that.
Oh,
and
yes.
I think even people who don't know the film hardly at all would know Bogart for that.
Ronald Reagan, right?
Well, Ronald Reagan, that rumor was an interesting one. And, you know, I really did a lot of research to try to trace that down. And I couldn't find out the definitive, but it seems to be that Warner Brothers never really considered him seriously for the role. And what happened was some publicist floated that out there, and it was put in the Hollywood Reporter. It's just more of a way of keeping his name before the public, but not really seriously considered for the role. So a lot of people have said, yeah, he was supposed to be Rick and this and that. But, you know, there's a lot of people that have written books about Casablanca, and I have a bibliography in my book that I list nine books that are written about Casablanca. And there's other people, believe me, that are much more expert about that kind of thing than I am. Al Jean Harmetz's book is a wonderful thing about how the movie came into being and the making of it. It's called Round Up the Usual Suspects. And so I obviously, in doing my own research, relied on the work of others because, it takes a lot of research to come up with 1,130 questions and answers.
Interesting enough, the Internet Movie Database does have a link to a picture of a flyer that was put out about upcoming films and apparently trying to generate some buzz,
uh-huh.
And they listed Ronald Reagan as his name being attached to the film.
Right, and what about George?
And they thought that might have been one of the sources of it.
And what about George Raft? I heard that he wanted that role.
Raft wanted the role, and the only one that actually had any inkling of using Raft was Jack Warner. Basically, his name, you know, he was the number one star, and they wanted a vehicle for him, but everybody else felt that he was definitely not right for the role. And Jack Warner, you know, mentioned him once. I found one communication where his name was mentioned. In terms of the role, even Cagney was mentioned in a communication.
And
in fact,
Alan
I have
Ladd?
Alan Ladd actually played Rick on the radio program.
Lux Radio Theater with Hedy Lamarr.
That's right. You remember that. Very good.
Well, I hosted a Real Classics radio show, and we had that Lux Radio Theater just last a couple of years ago. We played it on Real Classics Radio, and it was so interesting to hear Alan Ladd saying those bogey lines, and I just had to laugh. I really had to laugh. And Hedy Lamarr wasn't too bad, but she certainly wasn't Ingrid Bergman.
Well,
did you happen to hear that one, Diana?
No, I didn't.
But
sounds fun, though.
Oh, it was laughable. It was too bad, you know, to take the lines, those great lines, you know. And I wonder why this film is so popular. Tom, what are your theories about that?
Well,
why is it so popular?
It's, as Umberto Eco has called it, it's movies. It represents the movies. But I have three things that this film has that you don't usually see today in films. And you know, modern films are much different because, you know, what happened with Star Wars in 1978, and then the whole idea of special effects dominating modern films, which they tend to do. But anyway, it has a story that is a good story. In other words, the story is a story, and you care about it. It has a script that has dialogue that, even though some of it's a little corny at times, the dialogue is good dialogue. There's excellent dialogue, and then I think the most important thing about it is that it has characters that you care about, not just the main characters of, you know, Rick and Ilsa and Louis Renault and that, but even the minor characters that you care about. And so many of those minor roles are so memorable. I mean, Ferrari, the role of Ferrari by Sidney Greenstreet is so important to the film, and you know he only has 5 minutes of screen time.
Really?
But yet, look how powerful that role is.
Holy cow, I would never have thought that.
Yeah, you think about that. He has the same amount of screen time, maybe 20 seconds more than Peter Lorre as Ugarte. But Peter Lorre's is all concentrated in that one, you know, scene in the cafe there with Rick. And then, you know, Ferrari's kind of like a leitmotif. He's like appears here, 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 and here. But it's all very, very brief. But it's very, very powerful. And you just don't get you know, minor roles done that type of, they're just not done that way today. So,
I think that's
anyway.
Really right, and you hit the nail on the head with the story and the script and the characters that you care about, all of them, and they've got the right people to play to play these parts too. But Jazz, since you're probably the number one Casablanca film, why don't you chime in on this? Why do you think it's so popular?
You know, I posted something over at the Moderate Voice about this appearance today, and I'm hoping
Thank you. A lot of
our friends tuning in. And one of our regular readers posted a couple of comments in sequence, and he said, the reason that this film is the most memorable for people is the effect that it has on people and how it sticks in their mind. And he quoted a number of screenings that he had gone to, like at college cinemas and things, and the way that people kind of mouth along with the words. And he said he could think of no other film except possibly, and I hate to compare the two, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, where people know the film so well that they sit there and, like, kind of recite their favorite lines as they go along with the movie. It just seems to affect people. They watch it enough times, and it just sinks in.
It's almost like people want to watch it and find a different ending. You know, maybe if I watch it enough, things will really work out.
That's a good point. And I think that the filmmakers were for a time thinking about ending it differently. Is that right, Tom?
Yeah, that's there was talk of two different endings, and of course, but yet there was never, you know, the script was being written as the film was being filmed, so that's quite unusual for
really.
Which, yeah, and so the script was not finished when they started filming, and, you know, film 59. Yeah, and then you had so many different people working on the script. You had the Epstein brothers, and then they would bring in other people to give different, you know, a different slant on it, because the Epsteins would, you know, they had a much of the wit and the humor, and then they wanted to beef up the love story, so they brought in Casey Robinson to contribute to that. So they brought in all these different writers. I mean, it would, you know, almost never be done that way today. And so as they were going through, they weren't sure of what to do in terms of the ending. And then according to the Epstein brothers, they just, you know, they come up with a line, you know, round up the usual suspects. And so they built the ending around that, which, of course, is what Renaud says after Rick shoots Major Strasser.
Yes, and
so,
we've all used that line, haven't we?
Right. Round up the usual suspects, and, you know, the famous one today, of course, is used so often is, you know, I'm shocked that gambling is going on here.
This film had the best dialogue, I think, of any film, and no wonder the Writers Guild voted it as the best screenplay ever written, I think, a couple of years ago, because I think they're right about that. And some of the lines, they are just so great. What do you think are the best lines, Jazz? Which ones do you like the best?
Well, I when I put up that post, I had some of my readers respond back. I asked for other people to pick their own favorites, but I did say I was going to hold back my own choice until the show today. My favorite lines from the movie come pretty early on, and it's because I think one of the hardest things about writing a script is establishing the characters, and you can't spend a lot of time doing that, but for a great movie you have to establish the characters and their backstory and their relationship. And there's that one scene very early in the film where Rick and Renaud are sitting outside, and Renaud is asking him, you know, what brought you to Casablanca originally? And he talks about how it was his health that he came for the waters. And Renaud says, waters? We're in the middle of the desert. And Rick says, well, I was misinformed. And it's such a humorous line. It's one of the funniest lines of the movie for me. But at the same time, that little scene just seems to establish their entire relationship, how they're kind of adversaries, but they're friends, and they've been there for a while, and they understand each other's senses of humor. But it always cracks me up when he says, the waters, well, I was misled. And
I think that's
my favorite set of lines and my favorite scene from the movie, really.
How about you, Diana? Do you have a favorite line?
I do, and it's one that is said at the end of the film. I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship, which is what Rick says to Lewis at the end of the film. And I think this goes back to
what I was saying earlier, and that we hope things will turn out all right, where inside Rick's heart is breaking, but this line lets us know that he's going to be okay.
Oh, that's an excellent choice, too. And Tom, as the ultimate expert, which line is your
favorite?
Well,
I also like Jess. I love that line, if I was misinformed. I've used that over the years many times. It's kind of an understatement. But one of the things I liked in the film is that there's two nonverbal scenes that are, to me, very indicative of the power of the film. And they both are in the Blue Parrot. And if you watch what Ferrari does after people leave two different times, and then people leave the Blue Parrot, and there he is, and he takes his fly swatter and he swats at that fly or that bug. And he does it, and it just does it in such a nonchalant but very powerful and kind of evil way or sinister way or a way that shows the malevolence of his soul. And that kind of thing, to me, is what can make a film. You know, it's not necessarily the line itself, but it's the situation and what has been depicted. I love the character of Ferrari. I mean, the Sidney Greenstreet character, I think, is just, you know, without being overplayed, he's the personification of evil, but yet he also is someone that you can identify with in terms of not just only evil, but there's more to him than just that.
I think that's true. I sure do miss him. I loved him as a character actor. And I have to say what my favorite line is, because I think it sort of sums up the whole movie, and that's where Bogart's character, Rick, tells Ilsa that the problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world of ours.
Right.
I like that, because that's what was happening there. And but there's so many, absolutely so many lines in that movie. And while we're talking about the film itself, Diana, from your film critic perspective, not the publisher perspective, do you have any other questions for Tom about the film?
Well, first of all, I'm just in awe of everything that he knows, and boy, it just sounds like he's slept with this movie for many years, which I guess he has, so
yes.
Again, I congratulate you. I was just going to ask him a trivia question.
You're like my students. They always try to trick me, and believe me, they're pretty. Some of my students were pretty smart, and they could do it.
I just knew everybody was going to be lining up to do that to Tom.
Yeah,
everybody does it to
me. I had some too. Yeah.
Humphrey Bogart was nominated for Best Actor, but did not win. Do you know
right.
who he lost it to?
I think it was Paul Lucas.
You're right.
Yeah,
so watch,
I think
Watch
so.
On the Rhine, a movie we never heard
yeah,
of.
Yeah, Watch on the Rhine. And I think that's one of my questions in the book.
Oh, is it? Oh, good.
I think so. You know, when you deal with 1,130 questions, and also in the book I have factoids, too, and these are these little snippets or tidbits of information. And sometimes, you know, these will just tell you more about what went on in terms of making the film, and the factoids can actually kind of help you to answer some of the questions. But the biggest injustice, of course, was the most powerful performance, I think, in the film is Claude Rains as Louis Renault, nominated
right,
but
right.
did not win. And,
yep.
You know, he lost to, oh boy, there I go. I knew I'd lose something. Charles Coburn, I believe, he lost to. And yet that's considered by a lot of movie experts is one of the biggest injustices ever, is that Claude Rains did not win Best.
Claude Rains.
Yeah, did not win
so
Best Supporting
fabulous.
Actor.
He should have. And everybody who loves films remembers his performance in that. And I can't even remember what Charles Coburn won for.
I can't either, but I think he beat out Claude Rains. And if I'm wrong on this, I'm sure one of your listeners will correct me.
They probably will. Well, what are your favorite scenes in the film, and why, Tom?
Well, I like certainly the tarmac scene is a very, very powerful scene there, where Ilsa and Rick part, and that is a great scene. I like the scene where that reaches my heartstrings, and it does something for Victor Laszlo when he obviously leads the singing of the Marseillaise. I mean, I get a lump in my throat every time I see it, and I've seen the film probably maybe 250 times, but it affects
Uh-oh.
me. Yeah, and so that's a very powerful scene. And, you know, the character of Victor Laszlo does not come off real likable. In fact, I think Roger Ebert called him a pig in one of his reviews. But in that one little scene, we can see that there, you know, that there is power there in his character as a leader of the resistance. And that's a powerful scene. And then as he finishes and they finish the singing, you see Yvonne with the tear in her eye, and she says, you know, Viva la democracy, you know, Viva la France. So she is now, you know, come back to the French side when she had actually entered that second night in Casablanca, entered the cafe with the German. So it shows her transformation.
Right.
But anyway, that scene to me is very, very powerful. But there is an interesting sidelight to that scene. You know, before the band plays the Marseillaise, you know, they look to Rick, and Rick nods his head, you know, when Victor Laszlo says, play the Marseillaise, and the band leader looks over to Rick, and Rick does that nod. They actually did that as a cutout scene later. And Michael Curtiz asked Rick to nod, and Rick says, "Why do I?" Or ask Bogart to nod, and Bogart said, "Why do I have to do that?" And Curtiz says, "Just nod, you know, don't question it." And something later he said, "Actors, you know, they always question things." So he had it in mind what the reason for the nod was. Bogart had no idea why he was nodding.
Well, I think we should talk a little bit more about the actors in the film. And Tom, you've mentioned Claude Rains and what a great job he did, and Sidney Greenstreet, but what about other actors? Which actors do you think gave the best performances?
Well, you know, I especially like Kurt Boyes' performance, and he's the pickpocket, and it's only two scenes, very small, but his line that he delivers is very, very powerful when he warns
people. There are
so
many jackals around.
Yeah, vultures everywhere,
vultures, yes.
Yeah, vultures, where he's setting them up for, he's going to pick their pocket, so he's describing himself. But I especially like that performance, as small as it was. It's just an example. Ingrid Bergman, I think, did not have the greatest lines in the film, you know.
No.
And so she didn't really have a lot of lines to say, but yet, her performance is so powerful through her own looks, her own visage. There's one moment there where she buries her head in Rick's shoulder, in Bogart's shoulder, that's very, very powerful. And you can just see the tumult in her own life as she comes into the cafe. And so even though she didn't get the best lines, and she didn't, those kinds of the kind of acting she does with the looks that she does, if you try to think of someone today, you know, and people speculate about it, well, let's remake Casablanca and speculate on who to play these various roles. You can actually come up with some, I think, plausible people to possibly even be Bogart. But I don't think you can come up with anybody to be Ingrid Bergman.
What do you think about Madeleine LeBeau as Yvonne?
Yeah, that Madeleine LeBeau as Yvonne, you know, she's only 21 years old, and she holds her own in the scenes there with Bogart, and there she's very powerful performance. I'm surprised she didn't have more of a career. She was married to Marcel Dalia, who's the croupier during
the
film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they were getting a divorce, and he actually filed papers on her for desertion during the film.
Well,
but that one plaintive scene where she's asking about the character of Renault, you know, I mean, that's a pretty powerful
Joy Page. That's Joy Page there, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I did mix that
yeah,
up. That
that's okay. She's only 17 years old in that scene, and she's a high school senior, and she is, and that's her first film, and she was the last one to die. She died about a month ago, I think. From those who were in the cast.
Well, you know, I thought that Ingrid Bergman and Humphrey Bogart were marvelous in this film. And I understand just lately when I started doing some research about this film that they were not all that sold on this movie in the beginning, and they really didn't have much charisma together off screen. But on screen, I thought their charisma was, just very, very powerful, and their performances were wonderful. So what about you, Diana? What did you think about Bogie and Bergman?
I actually was going to say the same thing you did, because you know, we just finished Ingrid Bergman's biography, and
right.
she was not warm with him at all. And I think that, plus, as Tom had mentioned earlier, I think Bogart also got upset about the constant script changes. And I think that and the fact that they didn't really spend a lot of time together would kind of put them against each other. But yet on screen, they were just amazing, amazing. But I have to say one of my favorite characters still was also was Dooley Wilson, the piano guy who, Sam, you know. He was just a pivotal character that just that Humphrey Bogart could just bounce off of anything that was happening. So that was kind of like the center of the top.
I liked him too, and I guess he didn't really play the piano. I guess the piano, he did sing, but the piano was being played by somebody else off stage.
It was being played by Elliot Carpenter, who had actually auditioned for the role. And Dooley Wilson had to look at Elliot Carpenter to try to emulate the way his hands were moving. I guess if you're a real pianist, you can tell what's going on. But no, he was a singer, and I think Dooley Wilson was also a drummer, but definitely not a piano player. And he got his name, by the way, because early in his career he'd do these Irish jig types of things, so that's why they started calling him Dooley.
Holy cow, I always thought Dooley Wilson actually was playing the piano.
No. Someone that had actually auditioned for the role named Elliot Carpenter actually played the piano. So that's another thing.
They were considering a lot of different people for that role. In fact, wasn't Lena Horne one of the people that it was going to be played by a woman? And I think that would have been a mistake. I think that it was just fate that Dooley got that role because he did it so well.
And it was role, too, because it tied the characters from the flashback sequence in Paris to the present, and I thought that was a very key figure that brought the main characters together, you know, like getting that history tied into what's now going on in Casablanca.
Yes, and, you know, while I'm thinking about this here, I don't want to forget, and maybe Nikki can put this in the chat for us. Tom, could you tell our listeners where they can order your Casablanca trivia book?
Yeah, it's my website. It's got all the information about ordering, and it's just CasablancaTrivia.com. If you go to just CasablancaTrivia.com, it'll take you directly to my website, and it's all set up where you can order, and you can pay it's through PayPal, basically, and you pay by credit card or debit card or through PayPal. And basically, I offer a nice little deal. If you order more than one book, I pay for all the shipping and handling. So
good deal.
So I'm trying to encourage people to buy two, buy one for yourself,
okay.
And then buy one for a gift, and then I pay the shipping and handling. And the book is $14.95, and as you've seen, it's high quality. You know, I did it through my own publishing company that I established, Papyrus Publishing, but it's all done in America, by the way. my graphic designers and my printers.
Oh,
and and if people send me a separate email too, especially the listeners to your show, I will be happy to autograph it. So they just send the email to Tom Barnes, basically send it to CasablancaTrivia@cox.net, and that's shown on my website as well, where they can write to me. And if they write to me and they say, "Hey, I'm going to order two of your books, and I'd like them to be, I'd like them to autographed signatures," and I'll be happy to do that.
Oh,
you'll be getting that from me tonight, by the way.
Okay.
That's a good deal. I think it's time now to check with Nikki and see how things are going in the chat. Nikki, are there any reactions or questions that you'd like to share with us from the chat?
There hasn't been too much, except for we are having the discussion about we love happy endings, and an alternative ending is something that, you know, people who watch this movie usually, you know, dream or think about.
That's a good reaction, because that's something that Diana said. We watch it and hope that maybe this time it will end happily. Do you think that's something that mars the movie, Tom, or does that contribute to making it great?
No, I think that Casablanca is very much like the Mona Lisa. It's that enigmatic smile there in the Mona Lisa. In Casablanca, in the ending that it has, that's really what makes it memorable, because, you know, Rick gives up this great love for a greater cause, you know, and to me, that's what gives the power to the film, that we'll always have Paris. So he had that great love, but yet now they have to go on, and the cause is greater than their own love for each other. And I think that that ending actually makes the film a memorable film. Think about it. If the Mona Lisa, she had this big, broad smile, would it be the painting it is today? And I don't think so.
That's a good point. I love that scene at the end, even where Rick says that he's not a noble person, and then, of course, he does a very noble thing because, as I said before, the problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world of ours, and it was a crazy world back then.
Right.
So that ending, that beautiful photography, cinematography.
You know, it's so funny too, because the ending is, they actually were the entire film is basically made at the Warner Brothers studio there in Burbank. There's only one scene that wasn't shot there in Burbank, and that was the opening scene where Strasser arrives on an airplane, and that's actually shot at the Van Nuys Airport, which is real close to Burbank. But anyway, when they had that mock-up of that plane, it was just a kind of a cheesy mock-up of a plane. So they hired midgets, or little people, to be politically correct today, to be the mechanics working on the plane, so it made the plane look bigger than it actually was.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
They actually hired midgets to be those mechanics. It's a very brief little shot, but you will see these guys, and they're the mechanics working on that plane. And the reason that they were hired is because the plane is pretty small, and it's, you know, it's in the soundstage there. So that whole scene is shot in the soundstage.
I miss those. I think. Well, do you ever think there'll be a successful Casablanca remake?
Well, we all, those of us who love the film, we live in fear that they'll try it. There's the latest rumor, one of the latest rumors was that Madonna was going to do a remake, and it was going to be set in Iraq.
Oh, God, I heard that.
And that makes us all. There is an interesting one going on right now, though. There's one of the leading Indian directors, I can't remember his name offhand, I think it's Naj or Nye. But anyway, he is doing a Bollywood version of Casablanca, and he's going to set it in it's either going to be set in Sri Lanka or southern India, and it's going to feature the conflict between the Sinhalese and the Tamils, and that's the setting for it. And I think that thing is in the works, or might even be filming right now. So, you know, they've tried to make these kind of offshoots, like, well, the one with Robert Redford and Lena Olin was called Havana.
Yes.
That was done, and you know they just don't do it. And it's one of those films that to me they shouldn't even try. A remake would be horrible. They did make a remake, not a remake, but they did somebody got all the footage and he put it together differently in a Rio de Janeiro film festival one time. So they've played around with it like that. And, you know, there were two television programs, different ones based on the film. So they have done that. But, no, do I think that there'll be a successful remake? No, I don't think so, and I hope they don't ever try. Michael Walsh, I believe, suggested, you know, he wrote a prequel to Casablanca called As Time Goes By. He suggested Sean Penn for the Bogart role and Julia Roberts for Ingrid Bergen and Ralph Fiennes. And Ralph Fiennes for the Victor Laszlo. Fiennes actually makes some sense, but the other two I don't think make any sense.
No.
But, yeah, that was his suggestion.
I
never want to see that happen personally. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I really hope that never happens. It's one of those things that's just too good to mess with. Just leave it be, really.
And there was a movie with, of all people, Pamela Anderson called Barbed Wire. I think it was sort of a sci-fi movie that was a reimagining, I think, of Casablanca. Am I correct about
that?
That's
correct. I have that as one of my factoids in the book. And there, it's loosely based on Casablanca, but it was called Barbed Wire by Pamela Anderson. So
yeah.
I have a whole chapter that deals with sequels and imitators and that kind of thing. So, I have a whole chapter of questions that deal with all of those. And there's been a number of them over the years.
You go into so much depth in your book that it's a book that you need to, just like the movie, you need to go through that book over and over again because you have so much in it that's really entertaining and informational, and it's just a joy to have. So I'm glad that you're doing your best to get the information out about it. And one of the questions that I have been wondering about, and that is, do you, well, let's see, how shall I put this? Well, let me ask you this question, because I like to ask this question of everyone on the show. What's the most important thing you'd like people to know about you and your book?
Well, I just hope they see how much of a labor of love it was to do, to honor, you know, which I felt was, you know, the greatest film ever made, and that if they, you know, look at what I've done and take a look at the questions and the factoids and that this will enhance their enjoyment of the film Casablanca. So it will even make it a more powerful, more, you know, interesting film for them. So I'm hoping that that's what, you know, they see. You know, my book has a lot of questions, but you don't have to go to every little detailed one. I mean, you can roam throughout the book. If you've got a particular subject you're interested in, then go to that. You know, and you don't have to go from chapter 1 to chapter 33. You can, you know, start in with chapter 22 if you want. You know, I have a whole chapter just on the drinks in Casablanca. And so, you know, depending on what
Tom
you're
reminded
really
me. Betty Jo, you got to let me get to that one last question.
All right. One last question.
Okay, you asked earlier about the drinks. We were talking about the cocktails and things, and the one question I had for you, just to really check up on you, there were a lot of drinks ordered at Rick's, but when Rick went over with Ferrari to the Blue Parrot to negotiate the final sale of the cafe, when they sat down at the table, Ferrari sent the waiter away and ordered a drink that wasn't ordered anywhere else in the film. What did he order?
In the last scene when they negotiate the deal? Well,
right.
I think he orders bourbon.
He does order bourbon. Very good.
All right, Tom wins. There goes. He gets all the points.
Did I come through okay?
You did. You know everything about Casablanca. I can't believe it. Our time is almost up, and I want to thank you so much, Tom, for being such a great guest, and I know that you're going to have a great success with your Casablanca film trivia book, and the people who order that book will just have so much fun with it, and I hope you'll come back when you get your board game going and come back and visit with us again. Will you do that?
I would be happy to, believe you me. And I just want everybody that, you know, hopefully they'll go to my website at CasablancaTrivia.com or, you know, write to me, email me, and I'll be happy to, you know, answer any questions they have about Casablanca because I'm really devoted to it.
Great. Thanks so much to you, too, Diana, for co-hosting today. And
my
I'm reminding,
pleasure.
And I'm hoping, and I know that you will come back again soon. And I'm urging people to go also to your classicmovieguide.com site. And, Jazz, we really appreciate your participation today. And I hope people will listen to your midstream radio show on Blog
Thank
Talk Radio.
Jo.
And this is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout-out to the folks at Blog Talk Radio for all their support and connection with this show. Special thanks to Nikki Starr for everything she does to make Movie Addict Headquarters happen. Listeners, be sure to go to Nikki Starr's show Monday through Friday, Nikki Rocks the Politics at 10 o'clock Eastern Time. Thanks also to everyone who listened live or to the archives or participated in the chat. We really appreciate your cooperation. Now, you must remember this, dear listeners. Don't let your life become like a horror movie by falling victim to identity theft, the fastest growing crime in America. Protect yourself by going to lifelock.com and learning about the important services provided there. That's LIFELOCK.com. When you sign up, you'll receive a 10% discount if you use our special code REALTALK. That's REELTALK, and it's all one word. Please come back next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time for another lively discussion about the movies. And don't forget to check out our movie reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. Now, as usual, here's A.J. Daniels to close the show with a song Nikki and I dedicate to all our loyal Blog Talk Radio listeners.